This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. USDA out with a couple of reports, which include the World Ag Supply Demand Estimates and Crop Production Reports. Mike Lung with Allendale will help us break those down in a moment. Bart Kenner is an economist at USDA looking at ag export and import values.
Fiscal year to date, October through April 2022, agricultural exports were $119.4 billion, up 12% from $106.9 billion in 2021, and agricultural imports were $110.5 billion, up 21% from $91.2 billion this time last year, or a trade balance of $9 billion, down 43% from $15.7 billion this time last year.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by Mike Lung. Mike is with Allendale, Director of Brokerage. Hey, Mike, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
Okay, let's see a little bit about what you're doing at Allendale. It says on the card here, co-host of Allendale Market Talk. What is that?
That is our podcast here in house that I do with my co-host Greg McBride that you guys had on the show before. Talk about markets and everything weekly, recapping it all.
And that's something we can find probably through the Allendale website, right?
Yep, you can find us on the website or any of your local podcast hosting apps, whether it be the Apple App Store, Spotify, things along those lines. We're all on there.
We'll give you a website address coming up here in just a few minutes for Allendale, but let's just jump in with both feet here. USDA reports out on Friday, and we get WASD numbers, and we also get a crop production report. When you look at the numbers out from USDA, first, any surprises? And then I guess second of all, let's recap some of those numbers.
Yeah, for the most part, the surprises came more so on the world side of things than they did on the more domestic side of things. The WASD reports have been relatively out of the market's mind with everything going on the more macro side of things. And now we get a WASD report that gives us a little bit more to play with long-term estimates. So you had what came in here for a domestic side of things, more of a bullish type of picture for wheat and soybeans on the old crop side of things, soybeans for the new crop side of things as well. But corn, old crop and new crop, was a bearish number. Came in with a 1.485 billion bushel carryout for the old crop corn number and a 1.4 for the new crop with an expectations of a 1.34. So a little bit more bearish on that side of things. And really for the cotton side of things, a very neutral report. They did absolutely nothing to this cotton on this report except raise the average farm price with what's been happening on the board side of things and how elevated we've kept this cotton price on the board. So outside of that, that's really the only change domestically for the cotton side of things. And when we get to the world side of things, extremely large number coming out here for corn on the new crop number coming at 310. Expecting 305 and even came a little bit outside the top end estimate and a little bit higher for the beans as well, old and new. You did have South America's production upped for both Argentina and Brazil, corn and beans. And on the world side of things for the cotton side, really not a whole lot. They did adjust production slightly higher, but it was also slightly lower consumption on the world side of things, but nothing too huge, nothing too shocking for the cotton on this report.
We look at wheat numbers and through the crop production report from NASS, they're saying winter wheat production up 1% from their May forecast, and I guess that would be somewhat. I guess one way to look at it would be bearish, but you've got to be reminded that we're still quite a ways from where we were last year, and we were down last year, weren't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I remember correctly, last year was the lowest planting area that we have seen for winter wheat. So we this year did see a little bit of an uptick in planting area, but we are coming off of that very low number and coming off of really just a very competitive wheat market, and with us trying to build a little bit more of share in that with everything that's been going on the world side.
Corn numbers, when we talk about corn that's grown in the U.S., harvested, obviously we've got domestic usage, but when we start looking at exports, China has been a big player in that. What are you hearing about price and the opportunity for the exports to continue potentially to China into next year? Is that something the trade's talking about?
So it's something that's becoming more and more of a hush, because we actually did see a decrease in export numbers for this report for corn. We've been seeing a very slow down in external demand. And then you have stories like of China and Brazil coming together and talking terms for increased ag exports, and ranging from corn, beans, really anything that involves ag. So those types of stories and our continued fight with China on the whole Taiwan side of things, and China being very vocal that they feel that Taiwan is a part of their nation and their property, basically, and seeing that backing up of ideal out of Russia agreeing with China on that side of things, it is something that we're getting more and more worrisome that potentially that corn export business China is going to start to take the foot off the gas pedal and start to slow down a bit.
Just maybe a general reminder that it's not always about just the fundamentals of supply and demand. There's a lot of outside forces that work their way into our markets. You know, I also wonder, when we start thinking of things outside, maybe not outside of ag, but like CRP. Maybe a lot of times we don't think of CRP and our markets, but is that something that's on your radar?
It definitely is, especially with that story of building the wheat acres and where prices remain above double digits. We had the USDA come out and say give certain exemptions for land that is in the final year of CRP before the expiration of their contracts, being able to go out there and plant. And while they said it late May, which kind of it takes the wind out of the sails for potentially adding more corn acres or more bean acres, but it really gives the idea with as long as we've had wheat prices elevated, with how much profitability is there, taking that ability to plant it to this next winter wheat crop later this year and potentially seeing a lot of wheat acres, especially the longer we keep prices elevated as they are, seeing a lot of wheat acres added in the next year.
What about, when we start seeing some of that uncertainty, if you will, can that spill over into some of the investments being made into the markets that obviously provide the liquidity? Talking about managed money now.
Yeah, so that's a huge worry going forward. You have everyone talking about potential for recession, talking about how much the Fed's going to have to come in here and raise interest rates, what's going to be happening with economic growth, whether we're going to continue to see it slow down or if we're going to start to see some of these bottlenecks open up. And with that worry, it is something that you can see rebalancing the books. And we've seen managed money that's been coming in here and continuously liquidating positions, and especially on the corn end of things, and feeders making new record short position as of last week. Seeing money flow out of these markets and into the pocketbooks onto the sideline and potentially into markets like gold that had a huge outside day higher here today, up $25. Or some of these other assets, but taking money out as a whole and rebalancing those portfolios, and definitely should be on radar, considering we are coming up to the end of quarter two, and you'll have these managed money, these fund managers, things along those lines, looking at their quarterly reporting and looking at their high watermarks and seeing opportunities, especially days like report day or high volume days, as opportunities to start to dial back on the position and put some more money in that account. So definitely should be worried as we come into the end of quarter two.
Mike, I'm also kind of wondering, just in general, I mean, we've seen across the board prices much higher than we've seen in a long time. It makes me think back to the run-up we had in corn in the early days of ethanol. I'm just wondering, are we approaching a point with our commodities where we'll see demand destruction, whether it's cotton or it's wheat, where we'll see a switch out of those raw materials, if you will, looking for alternatives?
Yeah. So we've definitely seen some demand destruction. We're starting to see it on the livestock side of things with just bringing more to market, whether it be heifers, whether it be cutting down on especially the older hog barns, things along those lines, because feeding is just so expensive. And then you have like the EU who has been making mention of trying to dial back on biofuels and looking at that ethanol side of things, potentially seeing less production as well. So you see this energy market back off with all the talk about potentially increasing oil production and things along those lines, seeing this price back off. And then various groups calling for reduction in biofuel to begin with. So you're definitely seeing a pullback and look to cheapen things up, and whether it be from dialing back biofuels, that way we have more available supply, or whether it be not being able to feed enough, or seeing a dialing back of feeding due to just low inventory of livestock. There's a lot of things there that are long-term implications are outstanding and can definitely put a different spin on this market once we do start to figure out some of these other stories about whether or not we're able to get grain out of the Ukraine, or South America has any kind of year that doesn't have this dryness issue that we've seen the last 2 years, things along those lines. Once you start to see the supply start to be able to ramp back up and we have demands starting to curtail at these higher levels, it's definitely something that you can see longer term implications, much like what we saw after the fall off of 2012, where from 2013, 14 on to 2020, we had this more suppressed market.
Covered a lot of ground. If we want to keep up with Allendale, we want to check out the podcast. What's a good website to find all of this on?
You guys can reach us at www.allendale-inc.com.
That's allendale-inc.com. Mike Lung is Director of Brokerage with Allendale on today's Agribusiness Report.
If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Mike Lung, the Director of Brokerage, Allendale.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. follow Allendale online, allendale-inc.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
The new Fendt Ideal Combine has been designed to give you superior control over your harvest. It's time for better monitoring in a massive 485 bushel grain tank. It's time for the industry's best warranty and service program. It's time to discover the difference between a good combine and a great one. The new Fendt Ideal. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Subdrying was indicated in the latest USDA topsoil moisture condition report. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says for the period ending June 5th,
no change in the very short to short ratings. That is steady this week at 25% nationally. And then as we jump to the surplus numbers, that was a 2 percentage point decrease from the previous week from 14 to 12% surplus.
As for states with surplus topsoil moisture,
among the Midwestern states, that's really the only area that we see topsoil moisture still in the 1/4 to 1/3 surplus range, led by Ohio at 33%, Minnesota 29%, and North Dakota 28%, reflecting that lingering wetness. Also some pockets of wetness in the Northeast.
While six states in the Great Plains westward continue to report 50% or greater very short to short in topsoil moisture.
And that list includes California, Nevada, Montana, Colorado, New Mexico, and Texas.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.